I saw a stat the other day saying that by the end of this period, something like 8 million people will have been dragged into a higher rate tax bracket. And so it's actually a really sneaky way of governments increasing the tax take, whilst also being able to say to people, we're not changing the tax rates.
Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast, navigating UK tax for expats with LSR Partners.
Welcome back to the Tax Compass podcast from LSR Partners with me, Simon Ruey, and my business partner, Laura Sam.
Hi.
Today is a bit of a catch up on the 25-26 tax year, things that have changed. The headline one is obviously going to be a quick recap of the new regime for people coming into the country, the so-called foreign income and gains regime. But we'll also cover tax rates, talk about what they have or haven't done to allowances, and go from there. So, Laura, do you want to start with the headline, which is the new FIG regime?
So the new FIG regime has come into play from the 6th of April 2025, and it applies to those who are a long-term non-resident or were long-term non-resident before their arrival in the UK. So you're going to be long-term non-resident if you've been UK tax non-resident by means of the statutory residence test for at least 10 years prior to your arrival in the UK. And the FIG regime will then apply be eligible to make an election for the FIG regime for the first 4 years post-arrival. So the kind of the clock starts ticking when you become UK tax resident, and as I say, you can claim it for 4 years, and that's four tax years. So if you were to arrive, say, in January 2026, then the 25-26 tax year would be the first year.
Your first year, even though you can't use it all because you've obviously only just arrived.
Yes.
And if you go out again, the clock doesn't stop, does it? So it is only just those four first years.
Correct. So yeah, it is only the first 4 years. And what you might find in some instances, people may have been, they might have been outside of the UK for a prolonged period of time, but actually maybe they during COVID, for example, we had quite a few people had happened to be back in the UK at the point when COVID hit and all the lockdowns hit, and they actually became UK tax resident, even though the double tax treaty of the country that they were living in would have meant that their position would
they could have been treaty resident somewhere else, but the treaty residence thing doesn't help you, does it, on the FIG side?
Not for the FIG regime, unfortunately. In terms of the FIG regime, basically, if you have overseas income and gains, you can elect to put them outside the scope of UK taxation. You have to report them to HMRC. You have to quantify what you're not reporting to HMRC.
So practically, that's going to be hard, right? Because people with lots of complicated affairs, before it was like, I know I'm not bringing any of them in, so actually, I'm fine. I don't have to say anything.
Yeah.
But now it's the other way around. It's like, if I don't say it, it's taxable.
Yes.
So then I've got to go through and list it. We're waiting still, aren't we, to see what the tax return is going to look like as to how this is going to be incorporated.
We are.
I assume it's going to be something like the foreign pages, like an addendum to them, right?
Possibly. Or maybe even like a treaty relief, the treaty relief pages, maybe,
yeah,
where you outline these are my overseas income and gain sources, and these are why this, you know, I'm not including them.
And the other thing they've introduced around this stuff is the temporary repatriation facility for people who are currently or have been claiming the remittance basis.
Yes. So for those who were taxable under the remittance basis, who have unremitted income and gains, that would create a tax liability if they were to bring that money into the UK. Then what they can do is they can make designations under the temporary repatriation facility to bring in any unremitted income and gains at a tax rate for the next two tax years, so 25-26, 26-27, of 12%. It should be going up to 15%, 27-28. And then after that, if you were to then bring money into the UK that hadn't already been designated, you'd end up in a situation where you'd have to pay the full rate of tax, whatever that might be, at the point of remittance. So I think that one's going to be quite interesting in terms of people, I suppose it's that deciding to stick or twist. If they don't currently need that money in the UK, but they have a feeling that maybe they might want to bring the money in, do they pay the tax at 12% on a larger amount, not knowing whether it's going to be brought in at, but then knowing that they don't have to pay at 45% maybe later on.
Do I cleanse it at 12% and then at least I don't have to worry about it?
Yeah.
And to a point that we discussed in the past, it feels like some of those things will manipulate the figures in terms of the value and the benefit for this new regime. Because I think you know, there's been a lot in the media recently, hasn't there, about people leaving as a result of it. And we've done a separate podcast that's really focused on this stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess the question is going to be long term, what's it going to do, especially in the context of so many other jurisdictions having what are now more attractive rates, sorry, more attractive scheme, yeah. Because it seems like for 25, 26, the UK has gone off on a different route, which is we're going to try and encourage people to arrive for the first time.
Yes.
But for people who've been here for any length of time, we're not going to give them any form of encouragement to stay.
Yeah.
And that's fine, provided there's not an easy option to go somewhere else. And we're already starting to see that, right?
I mean, there are various countries that we are starting to see as being quite popular for going. And we've seen it for a few years, really. I mean, like, for example, there used to be lots of people who'd go out to Portugal because of the NHR scheme that's now been rebranded and is less attractive. Smaller numbers that seem to be going out there. Beckham Law under the Spanish tax regime, the Italian non-dom regime with the €200,000, Dubai, Malta. There's lots of countries that are trying to attract non-doms to them. So yes, as you say, the changes, whilst there's a reason that they've made the changes, there's going to be a tax impact in terms of those maybe with deeper pockets departing.
Yeah, so I think sticking on point to our 25, 26. No, I'm just conscious that if I'm not careful, I'll get on my soapbox again and off we'll go down the usual route that these podcasts take, which is me ranting about things.
Yeah.
But to try and keep it to tax, in terms of other things, can you just run through where we are in terms of income tax rates still? I think it's also helpful just to talk about personal allowances, the rates at which you change the different boundaries.
Yeah. So again, the tax brackets have effectively been held again. I think they did announce that they're going to be changing them, but for 25, 26, they remain the same. So the personal allowance is 12,570. You then have a basic rate bracket of 37,700, which when you combine it would take you to £50,270. You then, in terms of income levels, you're then taxed at 40% up until £125,140. But once your income levels start exceeding the £100,000 mark, for every £2 in excess of £100,000, you lose £1 of your personal allowance. So the effective rate of tax between £100,000 to £125,140 is 60%. And then above that is the additional rate tax bracket, which is at 45%. Dividends are taxed at a slightly different rate. So they went up last year or the year before because of the national insurance surcharge, which was kind of a knock-on effect from COVID, but they are 8.75% at your basic rate band. We've got 33.75% for your higher rate bracket and 39.35% for your additional rate bracket on the dividends.
And in terms of that freeze, I think it's quite interesting, and just a quick segue into talking about fiscal drag. So one of the things that you often hear is that term knocking around on the news, and it's probably worth a quick explanation. So it's a term that is basically used to say that you can increase your tax take without nominally changing your tax rates or your tax bands by basically saying people get pay rises, there's inflation. Generally speaking, salaries go up, not down. And of course, if you freeze all the rates for 5 years, and I think it's going to have been more than 5 years, because I think they've said they're going to keep them frozen until 27, 28 at least. May have even been 28, 29. It effectively means that you're creating, I saw a stat the other day saying that by the end of this period, something like 8 million people will have been dragged into a higher rate tax bracket. And so it's actually a really sneaky way of governments increasing the tax take, whilst also being able to say to people, we're not changing the tax rates.
Yeah, and I think that's it. They call it a sneak tax, don't they? Because from a government perspective, they're in a position to be able to say, we're not increasing rates, we're not increasing anything, we're just leaving it as it is. And as you say, with inflationary increases on wages, if nothing else, like more and more people's wages are going to be increased and going into higher tax brackets.
I guess the other one that is not so, well, it's not relevant for individuals at the level of you don't have to put it in your tax return. But I think the other big, big change that came in at the start of this year was, of course, the change to employers' national insurance.
Yes. So that has gone up from 13.8% to 15%. which I suppose just as a headline figure is going to be an increase. But the biggest increase element of it was the rate that it kind of kicks in from. I think it reduced down, I can't remember where it was, whether it's about 9,000 or something beforehand, but it's kind of...
It's down to 5,000 now, I think.
Down to 5,000. They increased the employer's allowance. So for smaller businesses that have a smaller number of employees, they might end up in a similar, if not even possibly slightly better off position as a result of those changes. But for your bigger companies who have significant number of employees who are maybe minimum wages, that is going to
hit them
significantly. And I suppose you might expect to see the recruitment marketplace or...
Well, it already has. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of evidence to say that recruiting at the moment is at its lowest rate for years. And that's certainly going to be one of the factors. Other changes. I think there've been a few changes under the inheritance tax proposals, but most of those are coming in actually from 26, 27 rather than 25, yeah. 26. So for the purposes of this 25, 26, anything we should be aware of?
Business asset disposal relief from a capital gains tax perspective. So up until last 24, 25 tax year, you could get a capital gains tax rate of 10% on any disposals up to £1 million.
And by business assets, presumably that would be like if you sold your small business type thing.
Exactly, yes. And
not if you sold the photocopier.
I mean, you could,
potentially.
You could try, but I don't think HMRC would
be a wasting chattel, I'm sure.
Yes. So if you were, well, as I say, 10% up until 6th of April 2025. For the 25-26 tax year, it's 14% for the first £1 million. And then from next year on, it's being increased to 18%, which is effectively your basic rate of capital gains tax, further to the uplift in October last year.
So essentially they're phasing it out.
Well, I suppose, are they phasing it out? Because it's still, you still be paying your capital gains tax at the basic rate of capital gains tax.
I suppose the point is, it at the moment it looks like it's going to become something where you just get a bigger basic rate band of capital gains tax, I suppose. Yes. Is the way you could perhaps look at it.
Yeah, I'd say, which is kind of the way that it was in terms of beforehand, because 10% was the basic rate on your kind of non-residential property. So I kind of understand why they do it, but I do know, I've had a lot of conversations with entrepreneurs who have decided that that's too much, and they are again voting with their legs and departing.
I guess the other thing from a changes perspective generally that people are starting to get wind of is the whole making tax digital thing. Can you just give us a little bit of an overview as to what that is, when we're expecting it to come in? Because I think that's something that's actually been, and we should probably do a proper session, yes, on the whole thing. But I think in this, it would be quite, talking about changes, it's quite a useful one just to give a little bit of a flavour.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, in terms of making tax digital for income tax, it's not coming into play until the 6th of April 2026, so the 26-27 tax year. However, if it's going to apply to you in that year, during 25-26, it's worth having a bit of a think about it. So it will apply to you if you have UK taxable rental income and or self-employment income in excess of £50,000. This figure is based upon the income levels. And it as I say, it can be either from rental or from self-employment, or say you had 26,000 of one, 26,000 of the other, take you above the 50,000. And you then have an obligation to join it. It's going to be fun and games. As always, when MTD for VAT came into play, that was a whole load of fun and games as well. But effectively, it's going to be quarterly reporting. So for a lot of people, it's going to be a lot of extra jumping through hoops. You're going to have to use MTD compliant software to report that every quarter. And then at the end of the year, you're going to have to use MTD compliant software to file the tax return as well, which... say is going to be
These changes are always a nightmare from an administrative perspective. Yes. And there'll be cost, and it's the usual stuff.
Yeah, it also will apply to people who are non-resident to the extent that they have the UK taxable element of it. And my understanding is it is only the rental income and or self-employment income that would get reported through that quarterly reporting, and then you'd get it reconciled through your tax return at the end of the year, and it's without adjustments as well. So those would all go through the year-end return. And then to demonstrate how HMRC are intending on this becoming something for, I say, everybody.
They'll try.
The following year, you'd come within the scope of it if your rental and or self-employment income was in excess of £30,000. And the following year, if it's in excess of £20,000. So basically, I suppose, if you have a smallish property and you're leaving the UK and you decide to rent out the property whilst you're, you know, working outside of the UK, you may well find that that'll sit within 10 grand, maybe, especially if you've kind of jointly owned property or something. And that's maybe going to sit outside. But anybody who's doing it as some sort of, say, business, you're highly
And also the direction of travel of all those things is always to the fact that then they'll get rid of any flaw and they'll just make everyone do it.
Yeah. But it'd be really interesting because, again, MTD for VAT came into play. And I don't think there's really been many adjustments to that. I was expecting there to be some sort of adjustment to bring basically anybody who was pretty much like registered for VAT within scope. And I don't think they've made those changes yet. So we'll see.
So we talked a little bit about changes to business asset disposal relief. A lot of people think that's just an inheritance tax thing because of all the farmer stuff, which of course doesn't come in this year. It comes in next year. Have there been any changes to inheritance tax that people should be aware of?
So the big change in terms of inheritance tax is the kind of the domicile and with the abolition of the non-dom regime. We're now looking at a residence-based system to work out an individual's scope of inheritance tax in terms of the UK side of things. So if you're considered to be a long-term resident in the UK, starting point is you're going to be, like, your worldwide assets are going to be subject to inheritance tax. If you're a long-term non-resident, you are only going to be within scope of inheritance tax on UK-based assets. In terms of, like, long-term residents as a criteria, in general, if you've been non-resident for at least 10 of the previous 20 tax years, you're going to be a long-term non-resident. If you have been UK tax resident but for less than 20 years before you leave the UK, then those kind of, the amount of time you have to be outside of the UK is kind of shortened.
It's like a sliding scale, isn't it? So yes. The worst case is that you'd have to be outside the UK for 10 full tax years before you drop out of the scope of inheritance tax.
And once you've been out for 10 full tax years, the clock's effectively reset as well. But it is one of those where it's interesting because I think to an extent it will make inheritance tax planning harder, because historically under the non-dom regime, people who were genuinely non-doms, they could actually leave the UK maybe 3-5 years and argue, like, legitimately, I'm a non-dom and take that outside the scope. So it'll be more difficult to plan it in terms of you're going to have to be out for at least 10 years. You have to start planning a long time before you die, that's what you want to do. But equally, people who we kind of always talk, I think it's Richard Burton, I think, who'd lived in Switzerland for 20 odd years, but when he died, he had the Welsh
flag thing
draped over his coffin, and part of him was scattered in Wales, and therefore HMRC went, no, he's domiciled in the UK, cost many, many millions. So this system at least makes it more clear. Well,
it's fact-based, isn't it? Yes. It's not the whole thing where it's an argument, you know, one man's view is a totally different one to another's.
Yeah, and I was going to say, from a UK, like, it's like when the statutory residence test came into play, because prior to that you could look at intention in terms of changing of residence and things, and now it's very much fact-based, as you say. Kind of makes things simpler, but equally more complicated.
Yeah. So hopefully that's given you a decent picking of what's going on in 25-26 in the UK tax year. And yeah, if you've enjoyed listening to our podcast, please do subscribe, like, leave us a review, so we can do more podcasting rather than tax returns.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Compass podcast, brought to you by LSR Partners, where we help you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Book a call with us. Details are in the show notes.